going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's @ImmacSports.
Instagram is also @ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 217, another wild week of the NFL season. I guess the Cowboys are dead now, too. We'll add them to the list. Dak and CD Lamb maybe out for a little bit. Also got
to get Jonathan Mingo. So
that's true. We got to watch out for him, of course. All those great Cowboy receivers still there, like Kevontae Turpin. But really, it's a tradition right before the MLB offseason. We got to go through a bunch of these, and that's going to be a majority of this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one, an episode that I look forward to every year where we do free agency predictions, whether it is for the NBA, the NFL, or the MLB. It's usually my favorite to do because it is the most, I don't know, impactful, I would say, in terms, because I feel like NFL free agency, a lot of the really good players don't get to free agency, and same thing with basketball. Usually if those guys move teams, it can be via trade. In baseball, we see free agents happen all the time, and just about everybody at some point in their career is going to go through free agency, and we're seeing that especially this year with Juan Soto. I saw it last year with Shohei Ohtani, and I assume we'll continue to see it with, you know, these top of the line players as we go on throughout the years in the MLB. But as we always do, we'll get into the opener to start it off. And not the best thing I saw, but definitely the most important thing going on today is the election. And I know we do not usually talk about this stuff on the podcast, and I mentioned this to you earlier, but it is important to vote if you do feel you know, impacted by the stuff going on. And my least favorite type of people is the type of people that feel like they have an issue with the stuff going on and they don't vote because then they're just actively going against what they say. If you don't care and you don't vote, it doesn't hurt me. But I definitely do think it is important to kind of be in tune with stuff going on in your country. And yeah, it's a good privilege to vote. There's a lot of people who fought really hard for the right to vote. And being able to do that, I think, is one of the biggest privileges that we have in a, you know, U.S. where you are allowed to vote for who is going to be the next leader of your country, whether it matters or not. In California, I vote blue or red here. It's not going to change a damn thing. But it's so cool to be able to say that you can have that ability, because there's many places around the world where it isn't like that. So just thought I'd spiel my 30 seconds, just a minute on that.
Well, speaking of voting, at the end of the season, maybe for the ESPYs, we're going to be voting on who made the best catch this season. And I think my guy Garrett Wilson's going to be pretty high on that list. He made two of the most ridiculous one-handed touchdowns, touchdown catches on Thursday night against the Texans. And the Jets season was probably over without him. He had 9 for 90 yards, those two touchdowns. One of them looked like the Jordan logo. I know many people declared the Jets dead last week, including you. But there seems to be one spot left right now, and it's between like Cincinnati, the Chargers, and maybe even the Jets. So we'll see what happens. I won't be putting my money on that, but I'll be rooting for them. That's for sure.
Yeah, I hope you'd be rooting for them because that is your team. Yes. I will say, if it was the best thing I saw this past week, I do think I'm going to go with the Saquon reverse hurdle. That was pretty cool. Ridiculous thing, and I think it'd be unfair to not mention that in the opener for what he did and how he's been as a Philadelphia Eagles so far. He tried to do this backwards hurdle a couple of years ago when he was in New York against the Dolphins, and it tried to do like a spin backwards hurdle and it ended up working out. He got tackled on it, but he completely pulled off the backwards hurdle on Sunday in those sweet Kelly Green jerseys. And I don't know if you saw the sideline video from that, where it's like shown from the Philadelphia Eagles behind the sideline of that happening. And you look at Reed Blankenship and he's freaking out. Jordan Davis is freaking out. Yeah. Goddard's like, oh my God. Like, it's just crazy to see the professional athletes that are around him every single day and at the top 1% of, you know, the human body genetic system are still that amazed to see what that guy can do. And we talked about this in the past where he's just like this prototype of a RB prospect, and Saquon having the career that he's having and now in Philly, it's really cool to see. I'm sure we'll talk more about him and the Eagles as we get into our power rankings here in a little bit. But before that, we do have to do our player, defense player, and rookie of the week. There's a lot of different choices for player of the week. Skyler, who'd you end up choosing for the week 9 performance?
I'm going to have to go with Patrick Mahomes for my player of the week after the Monday night win in Tampa. Todd Bowles just knows how to put Mahomes in a very uncomfortable situation, just like in that Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Mahomes didn't care. He was 291 passing, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he was doing crazy stuff all night on the run with his left hand on one leg, literally because he wrecked his ankle. It was just ridiculous all night long.
Yeah, that's a good choice. I decided to go with another former MVP, multiple-time MVP, in Lamar Jackson for his 16 for 19, 280 passing yard, 3 touchdown, no pick performance for what so far has been likely the MVP in the NFL through 9 weeks. He's been so damn good. Him and Derrick Henry are unstoppable in the backfield in Baltimore, and they showed that again this past Sunday against the Broncos team that has – and better than expected. What about defensive player of the week?
Trey Hendrickson had a pretty crazy week against Vegas, but out of respect, I'll go in a different direction. How about the Rams safety Cam Kitchens? 100-yard pick six and then another red zone pick to seal the deal against their rival Seahawks.
Yeah. I will have Trey Hendrickson for mine. I'm not going to – I say this in the most respectful way possible because Trey Hendrickson's a stud and 4 sacks and 4 fumbles, nothing to slouch about. But the Raiders' O-line was so beat up. We got 3 guys injured during the game. On the broadcast, they were mentioning when do we start putting defensive players at tackle or guard during this because we had only one other lineman. So that's how bad it got on Sunday. And we saw that with Minshew and Ridder, just their inability to get the ball downfield because they didn't have any time to throw. It was pretty evident in that game. But Trey Hendrickson definitely, you know, made that issue worse than it could have already been. And how he was and how he's been in the past as well, too, definitely deserves a defensive player of the week honors. On to rookie of the week.
It's probably Cam Kitchens again, the safety out of Miami. Great week for the Rams, but he doesn't play quarterback, so I guess I'll go in a different direction here. Jaden Daniels, another big win over the Giants in the trap game. 2 touchdowns, no turnover-worthy plays. It doesn't get much better than that, really.
Feels like we've had a QB, running back, or wide receiver every week in the rookie of the week. So I decided to go with the defensive player Cameron Kitchens for his, you know, 2 pick performance. 103-yard pick six was ridiculous. And he kind of just jolted himself right into the defensive rookie of the year rankings with how kind of shallow that candidacy has been so far. So good for him. Probably competing with his teammates as well too, because there's a couple other young Rams defensive players that are pretty good as well. On to our top 15 power rankings. We did this 2 weeks ago. We do it every 2 weeks in the NFL. I guess we'll start off with the teams that did not make the list that were on your list last time or some honorable mentions that you want to talk about.
Yeah, the Bears, the Bucks, and the Seahawks will be knocked out. Really rough offensively for all 3 teams. Even if they have been dealing with injuries, it just hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, if you remember from 2 weeks ago, our rankings were almost identical the entire way through. And it remains identical here with the 3 teams off and the Bears, Seattle, and Tampa Bay not making my list. So on to number 15, we'll see if we, you know, just got that power ranking chemistry again this week.
I'm going to go with the Cardinals for the 15 spot. They're going to get the nod over the Bears and the Bucks because they've won 3 in a row now. It's the second year under this new offensive system, and it's finally starting to work. Kyler, Marv, McBride, all those running backs, pretty scary so far.
I'm going to go with the Chargers as the number 15 team. This is a team that I've been pretty down on in previous weeks due to their lack to produce an offense, and I really think they're starting to figure that stuff out over the past few weeks. They didn't make a move at the trade deadline, which I really liked for them to see. They didn't end up doing anything crazy on the offensive side of the ball. But what they've done with Quentin Johnston, J.K. Dobbins, Ladd McConkey this year has been pretty impressive. And their defense is playing good as well, too, as they have the entire season, only 101 points allowed in 8 games. So they do make the top 15 rankings for me, probably the first time this year, or maybe the second time. Number 14.
At 14, I'm going to keep the Niners there from last time at 4-4. They beat Dallas since we've been gone, and they've had a bye week. It's definitely not over. They're getting a little healthier each week, and we might even see McCaffrey come back sooner rather than later. They picked up a D tackle at the right at the buzzer today.
I also have the Niners remaining in the number 14 spot. Like you said, they beat the Cowboys, had a bye week, so there isn't really too much to judge off of. So that's why I kept them in the same spot. They do go into a pretty interesting stretch here over the next 4 weeks where they have the Bucks, Seahawks, Packers, and Bills, three of those games being on the road. It's going to make or break their season. We'll see if they get out of it and they're 5-7. They're probably not going anywhere, but if they get out of it and, you know, go on the typical Niner late season run that they've gone on the last 5 years and they're 7-5 or 8-4, I wouldn't be completely shocked with that. Then they're back. And that's a scary sight for every other NFC and every other team in the entire game. Number 13.
At 13, I'm going to go with the Chargers. Unranked so far this season, 5-3 though. And they're surprisingly back in the hunt too. I think we're both more confident that Harbaugh could get more out of these weapons than a team like Denver could with theirs. So I'm not shocked, but good for them. They're finally in the top 15, just like you.
Number 13 for me, one of the unranked teams, is the other Los Angeles football team. That's going to be the Rams, winners of three in a row, the Raiders, Vikings, and Seahawks. Obviously, those Vikings and Seahawks wins are a bit better than a Raiders win, even though the Raiders game was technically the closest point-wise. Kind of interesting there, but they've been good the past few weeks. They're starting to get healthy. Right as Puka gets healthy, he decides to throw a punch and get kicked out of the game, but it did not matter because DeMarcus Robinson turned into Calvin Johnson on Sunday, and his ridiculous performance that he had, like we talked about with Kinchins, the defense is starting to look better. They got a lot of young guys in there, so there's a lot of moving pieces going into the season. I think they're starting to figure that out now, and I think there's getting into a stretch of football with the Dolphins, Patriots, Eagles, Saints over the next 4 weeks. There's three very winnable games in there, and plus the Eagles on a Sunday night game, which will be fun to watch. So I like this Rams team, and I think they're playing their best football this season right now. Number 12.
And number 12 is where I have the Rams. Yeah. A massive win against Minnesota. I think this helps a lot trying to figure out what kind of team they're going to be. They're going to be the team that we've known the past couple of years. You know, doesn't matter what the spread is, they're going to be in all these games with Cooper Kupp and others back. And just like all the others we've just mentioned, they're right back in the race, you know, maybe a game or so behind a spot.
Number 12 for me is going to be where I slot the Arizona Cardinals, who are a 5-4 team, haven't had their bye yet, of course. They've kind of surprised me. When you look at their schedule and you look at their losses, I know there's some, you know, ugly score losses, but it's the teams that they lost to are the Bills, the Lions, the Commanders, and the Packers. Like, those are four, like, pretty damn good teams. They beat the Niners. They beat the Rams by 31 points. They just beat down the Bears in a very weird, rainy game in a dome stadium in Arizona. I don't know if you saw that, but that was pretty crazy. So they move up from unranked to the number 12 spot. He got a big test this week against the Jets to potentially kill their season, which is unfortunate but very true. Number 11.
I'm going to go with the Falcons at 6-3. They're going to get bumped up pretty high here from 15 plus 4. You got to win the close ones if you want to go on a playoff run here, and that's what they've done over the last 2 weeks at Tampa and pretty much killing the Cowboys season themselves last week if it's not for the injuries that are coming up. So 6-3 for Atlanta in the driver's seat for the South, just like we talked about 2 weeks ago.
I also have Atlanta at the number 11 spot. They move up two spots for me. I talked about this team a lot early in the season. I thought they were going to be one of the best teams in the NFC. The record now shows that they're winners of five of their last six. They play the Saints this week, then the Broncos and the Chargers. So definitely some winnable games in there as well, too. I'd like to see this defense step up a little bit more. That's the one thing that's holding me back on them. Because they got all these names, especially in the secondary, and they're just not quite producing right now. So I know the offensive pull is pulling their weight, but if they want to be a true legitimate contender in the NFC with the Lions and Packers and some of these other teams, then they got to play defense. That's what win games. Number 10.
At number 10, I'm going with the Texans. At 6-3, they are dropping down four spots for me here. It was a rough one against the Jets. I know they're banged up, But at some point here, you got to start scoring more points. If it's hard to say. It's not necessarily about the odds or the betting lines with Stroud, but he still is way under what he's supposed to be doing this season.
Number 10, the Texans, have moved down four spots for me as well, too. But I think this is quite justified over the last three games. Ugly performance from Stroud in Green Bay, which we know is a tough spot to play. They beat the Colts by three. But then again, that was Anthony Richardson Colts. And whether it's Flacco Colts or Richardson Colts, I don't really think the Colts team is too good. But they still got the win, which is what matters, of course. And then losing to the Jets on Thursday Night Football. I know Nico Collins has been out. Stephon Diggs is now out for the season with a torn ACL. And that's the first game on Thursday that we really saw the offense without Diggs this season. Collins should be coming back soon. But the offense is slightly bit worrisome. And that's not something I expected for this Texans team going in. I do like the defense still. And I think they've played well over the, you know, the course of the season. But man, oh man, if they beat the Lions, I'll be shocked. And that's not really talking too bad about the Texans. It's just how good the Lions are. Number nine.
At number nine, I have Green Bay. Same record as Houston, 6-3. They're also going to drop down four spots. I don't think they're done. I really like the running game. Jordan Love is just playing a little reckless right now. And I know they've also been a victim of the horrible weather. But he's got to stop throwing really bad pick sixes if they want a chance to win. That's stuff Flacco does, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I also have Green Bay at number nine. They moved down four spots for me as well. Lost to the Lions is something I expected, but that was kind of a game that you need to win. It's at home. It's against one of the best teams in the league. And if you're going to have a chance to win the division, you're going to have to win that game. The Lions played that game in Lambeau as if they were the home team. And that's not something that we've seen from Lions teams in Green Bay. I mean, I know they've won three in a row now, but that's just not something we see too often with that. So I think that could be a demoralizing loss for the Packers. I do think they come out of the bye next week and they probably should beat the Bears. But right after that, they get back on it with the Niners and then the Lions a couple of weeks after that as well, too. So tough schedule coming up for the Packers and a lot of games that they need to win if they want to have any chance in the division. Because we know that's usually what determines it if you're going to make it to the Super Bowl or not. Next up, number eight.
At eight, I got the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're 6-2. They benefit a lot from the bye week. They're moving up three spots from 11 because a lot of teams in that same category have had embarrassing losses. They just got Mike Williams today. That should help out Mr. Pickens. It feels like they've been looking for a number two for about 5 years now. And they got a massive game in Washington next week. That'll be their first real test in a while.
Number eight for me, switching it up. I have the Vikings moving down four spots to number eight. They beat the Colts, but I don't think that game was the cleanest game. They lost to the Rams before that and then lost to the Lions that we know before that as well, too. I still like this team. I don't think moving them down to eight is anything that's ridiculous or shitting on them, really, because this is way better than what we expected going into the season. And I just think they're getting a slight bit of a reality check right now. I do think this team is still a playoff team, but I don't think they're close to as good as what the Lions are. So moving on to number seven.
At seven, I have the Minnesota Vikings. I'm only going to drop them down three spots from four. And I agree with it all. You know, it's a little bit of a reality check, but I still don't blame Sam Darnold. I think they really had no shot to compete with Detroit. And this is kind of a miracle that they're still only a game behind them right now. So good for them. The defense is always going to be good. Just don't go away from running the ball. See all those mistakes that happened the other night? They barely beat Indy. That was a scary game.
Yeah. Number seven for me is going to be where I slot the Pittsburgh Steelers, plus five from the last rankings. And I know Justin Fields played decent enough in his games, but I really like what Russell Wilson does to this offense. And I really like that they added Mike Williams today as well, too, because that's the exact type of receiver that succeeds with the Russell Wilson, a guy that gets the ball downfield. Russell Wilson is notoriously one of the best deep ball throwers in the game. And he's got two wide receivers that are as good as you can and jump ball guys in Pickens and Mike Williams. They've added the run game to be really good with Najee Harris. It's not something that we've expected. And it kind of reminds me of a bit of a Tennessee offense a few years ago when they had A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, and Derrick Henry, where they ran downhill a lot and chucked the ball deep a lot. And this kind of feels exactly like that right now. The only difference between that Tennessee team, even though the Tennessee team was the one seed, is that this defense is really freaking good. And I think that's probably the best part of their team. We're going to see if it is over the next 2 weeks with the Commanders and Ravens on their schedule. But it should be fun. I think the Steelers team is better than that 11-0 team that we saw in 2020 and some of the other seemingly fake good Steelers teams that we've seen in the past. I think this one's legit. Number six.
At number six, I got those Washington Commies you were just talking about. 7-2. They're up two spots. I feel like they probably don't deserve to be in the top three area, even with their record, just because of how close other games have been. But it's better than losing those one-score games, that's for sure. I like what Jayden Daniels is doing. They're obviously trying to win, too. They just went after Marshawn Lattimore. He's got a couple more years on the deal, too. It's clear Dan Quinn's got it figured out right now.
Yeah, I got Washington as a number six spot as well, too. They move up two spots for me. I'm really looking forward to these next 2 weeks to see how they play against the Steelers and the Eagles, specifically the Eagles, because they get to play them twice, obviously, this season. I want to see how they compete against what we know is a top roster in the NFL right now. Commanders added, though. I think that's something that's really cool, getting Marshawn Lattimore for, I believe, a third, fourth, and a sixth round pick or something like that. That's a big piece on a defense that has been better than expected this year. And this offense with Jayden Daniels at the helm seems to be rolling. So Washington seems like a really good football team. And again, that's not something we expected to see this year. Back-to-back years where a rookie quarterback has led a team to be way better than what we've expected. Number five.
At number five, I got the Baltimore Ravens, 6-3. They're dropping down from two, and I can't help but blame myself for their collapse against Cleveland. I knew deep down inside that I probably shouldn't have moved them over Detroit, and they just couldn't score any points against the Browns. It was horrible. They lost to Jameis Winston, but they bounced back. Lamar Jackson, he was someone you mentioned earlier today, the perfect passer rating once again. They're going to be just fine, but I moved them down to five because they lost to Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I did move down the Ravens to number five as well, too. A bit less of a fall here because it was 3-5 here for me. But they do move down two spots for that loss to the Browns. We've talked about this more in previous years, but I think we've consistently given a team a mulligan. And I think this was their mulligan that we've seen because they played really good football from week three to week eight until that loss against the Browns. Obviously, the loss to the Raiders in week two doesn't really look ideal right now either, but they bounced back this past week against the Broncos, and I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think if the games are flip-flopped and they beat the Broncos in week eight and just lost to the Browns, we'd probably react a little bit more heavily. But to see that they got back on the horse and kept going, it was good to see. And Lamar Jackson's playing like the best quarterback in football right now, so how could he not have him in the top five? Number four.
Number four, I got Buffalo, 7-2. I can't keep them down there anymore. They're moving up from seven. Another great comeback win against Miami. And that's the thing about that division. You may take a look and be like, what? They let Achane run all over them? Well, that's how it goes in the AFC East sometimes, Kyle. And they got the job done. They're 7-2. Josh Allen's playing great. He's, 1B to Lamar Jackson, if you will, right now.
Number four for me is going to be where I slot the Philadelphia Eagles, winners of four in a row. They just beat the Jags and the Bengals. The Jags game, I feel like the score looks a little bit closer than what that game actually was. I feel like the Eagles had that for most of the game. And I know it came down to a drive at the end that Trevor Lawrence threw a pick in, but I felt like the Eagles were going to win that game regardless. They move up five spots for me. This team is starting to look more and more like the 2022 Eagles. If they blow out the Cowboys on Sunday like they should, then I definitely think this is a really good team. And if they beat the Commanders the week after that, that's when we really start talking. And that's the Commanders-Eagles game, I believe, is a Thursday night game, which will be pretty cool to watch. Oh, so yeah. Back-to-back fun Thursday night games, the Bengals-Ravens this week, and then the Commanders and Eagles the week after that. On to number three.
At number three, I'm going with the Eagles. It's the biggest jump for me from the ninth spot. Yes, they've had their problems, but that's four wins in a row, and the game's coming up, too. How can you not be excited about an injured Dallas team and Washington on a short week, rookie quarterback? Things are looking much better for them right now.
Number three for me is going to be where I slot the Bills. Winners of four in a row. They look good, man. Josh Allen looks to be on that MVP level. Close win against the Dolphins. This is their first close game in a couple of weeks. I don't know, man. They just look good. They move up four spots for me. The defense is playing better. Go to number two and number one probably don't change, but we're still going to talk about them. So tell me about the Lions at number two.
Yeah, they're going to stay. Actually, they bump up for me. I forgot. But yeah, they were at three. I shouldn't have done it. They're back at two. Everything we were worried about, it seems like they understand. That's what happens when you have a great head coach, great ownership, great general manager. You're going to go after Za'Darius Smith when your star edge rusher gets hurt. They got him today. Really like what Jared Goff is doing, or what he's not having to do on this team right now, because the two-headed monster at running back, pretty hard to stop.
Yeah. Detroit at number two, of course. This is the best team in the NFC by a landslide, in my opinion. They just play so complete on both sides of the ball. They battled through a ton of adversity on the Sunday against the Packers, where Brian Branch got ejected on a play that he probably shouldn't have. They were playing in this crazy weather game. They found a way to get a win in Lambeau. And that, I know that means a ton for Lions fans and that team in general. Fun Sunday night matchup against the Texans that we're looking forward to. And then after that, the schedule takes a little bit of a break with the Jags and the Colts. So I should expect this team to probably be 10-1 going into that Bears game on Thanksgiving. Next up, the number one team, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, 8-0. I really thought Tampa had them last night. There was around halfway through the third quarter, Mahomes was clearly banged up. Todd Bowles was making it really tough for him, but they still end up pulling it out, man. Good for them, I guess. They're going to be number one for a while, I think.
Yeah. Kansas City number one, of course, and I think it's very interesting with this team. We've talked about it a ton, but it's just like they're playing a lot of close games right now, but it feels like they never have a problem in those close games. There's never like an oh shit moment they're going to lose, and I know it was getting close to that last night, but they scored what was like 4 minutes left and then ended up scoring again, or obviously they got the touchdown in overtime. But the biggest point, DeAndre Hopkins, man, he looks really good. And the chemistry that he had with Mahomes in really his first real game. I know he played against the Raiders, but he got traded that week. So can you really, you know, call it, you know, full week of preparation and all that stuff? You got that full week against the Bucks, and he was as good as we've ever seen DeAndre Hopkins be in his career. And that's saying a lot. If he's playing like that and Mahomes has another wide receiver that he just trusts like that, it's going to be really ridiculous to watch. And I know D-Hop today posted on Twitter, probably posted on Instagram as well too, a photo of Brady and Moss. And I was like, oh God, don't let this happen. Because if it does, it's scary. I was also thinking when Mahomes got hurt, I'm like, oh shit, how is this going to affect my power rankings? Like, am I going to move him down? Of course, once we don't have to go through that. Luckily, because Mahomes came back in the game and obviously finished it out. But I'm curious of how good this team would be with Carson Wentz. And that's not something we'll get into now, but maybe something, you know, if he does get hurt, it's going to be something we're going to have to talk about, of course. So
reverse
something was put on my horizon for the first time this year. But moving on from that, we've got the MLB free agency predictions. We got 29 guys, two from Japan, one from Korea that we're going to talk about that are pending free agents to come stateside this year. We'll start off with the biggest fish of them all, Juan Soto. Where's he going, Scott?
I don't think he's leaving New York, Kyle, but I do think the Mets have a slight edge over the Yankees right now. Maybe it's just the recency bias, Yankees struggle in the World Series. Of course, the Dodgers are always the wild card. Any top player we talk about tonight, the Dodgers, I'm sure, have already talked to them. But I'm going to go ahead and say the Mets try to do what the Dodgers did last season.
Yeah, I'm going with the Mets as well, too, for Juan Soto. I think the Dodgers, Yankees, Mets are going to be the real three players when it comes down to it for Soto. And we know he's going to go to the top dollar, and I don't think Steve Cohen is going to be denied, especially when it's competing against the Yankees for something that he knows he can beat them in right now. I predicted a contract as well, too. I think it's going to look like 15 for 645 because he is only 25. It's not uncommon to see these contracts go into these ridiculous years where it's past their prime, a little bit past that prime as well, too. And I think Soto probably gets that contract until he's 40 with the Mets, whether there's opt-outs or not, who knows. But I got Soto going to the Mets. On to Alex Bregman, former World Series champ.
I got Bregman sticking in the American League West here with Seattle. They have a lot of utility guys coming back, but they really need mashers. They're going to be in the market on all the guys that are available. Bregman's a weird one. I could totally see him going back, but he's another one of those guys who's already sent his goodbye post type of situation. So I'm going to bet on him leaving Houston.
Yeah. I definitely do think he leaves Houston. They got Framber and Kyle Tucker to pay in the future, and I think that's they're going to value those guys a little bit more than Bregman, especially now that he's not a guy that's just coming into his first free agency. This is his second time going through it. So I do think he leaves Houston. There's two teams that jumped out to me. The Mariners were definitely one of them, but I decided to go with the Phillies as a team that will be the destination for him. I believe Philly will move on from Alec Boehm, and replacing him with Bregman will be perfect. I talked about this when we did our team grades. This Philly team needs a jolt because if they just return back with this lineup and this team going into the 2025 after 3 years of not getting it done, I think there's just that little bit of doubt in their mind. And when you have that doubt, you're not going to be able to win a World Series. You add a guy like Bregman, who's won multiple World Series, asterisk or not, doesn't really matter to me. You know he's a stud. You know he's been there before. You know he's going to produce in October, and he fits right in that Phillies lineup in a need that they have at third base. I think it'll look something like 6 years for 150 would be my guess. So a bit of money, but they got to do that to get him over to Seattle because you know Seattle's going to want to pay him as well. Next up, probably the top pitcher on the market. That's debatable, but Corbin Burnes is the next guy that we're going to talk about.
We know this guy is going to get a massive contract too, so I'm sticking with the Mets once again. Like I said earlier, I think they're going to try to pull some Dodger magic, go after the top hitter and pitcher pretty hard here. And of course, you're going to have a lot of suitors for Corbin Burnes, maybe 10-plus legit ones, but I'm sticking with the Cohen magic.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of contenders for Corbin Burnes. I think some surprise ones might be like the Angels or Toronto. I think get in there that we know I've seen to spend money before. I'm taking a bit of a wild guess here, but I'm going with the Orioles. I think he's going to go back to Baltimore. I think this is the first time that they're going to start paying their guys because they realize, hopefully, that if we don't pay our guys, we're not going to compete with the Yankees because they're going to do everything that they can to get back. We know the Red Sox are coming. So you're going to have to add or at least, you know, not subtract to Corbin Burnes from your team. And so I think he stays in Baltimore. 7 years, $210 million is my guess. Next up, Blake Snell, multiple Cy Young winner, best lefty on the market.
Yeah, you just mentioned Boston being in the pitching market. I think this would be a perfect fit, too. In my universe, the Mets aren't in on Blake Snell. So this is the perfect opportunity for Boston to do it. They've played out their rebuild pretty much perfectly. The top hitting prospects are ready to go, and the money's left over for the ace.
And something else to point out with this, usually why we do this in this order where it's the top free agents to the bottom free agents is because usually the first guy has to sign and the next dominoes continue to fall from there. So that's kind of where we're at in these. Obviously, you know, things can change and, you know, maybe Snell signs before Burnes or maybe, you know, Soto doesn't sign until January, which I think would be dumb, but these are all guesses, of course. Spell like I'd preface that. But I have Blake Snell going to the Angels. I think a lot of the top contenders are going to be in the mix. I think the Angels probably offer the most money. 5 years, $180 million is my guess. I think Snell will be definitely willing to stay on the West Coast. That's where he's pitched some of his best baseball. And I think the Angels are a team that are going to want to spend money. And they've shown in the past, and I think they're going to show it again this offseason. Next up, the most intriguing free agent, perhaps, besides Juan Soto this offseason is going to be Roki Sasaki coming over from the MPB in Japan. We saw him pitch in the World Baseball Classic. He was fantastic there. There's a bit of an interesting situation here where he can either be posted or not by his team in Japan. The estimate now is that they are going to do that. But this doesn't just come as like a Yoshinobu Yamamoto situation where he can just sign for as much money as he wants to. It's going to be much more like Ohtani's, where they have to go based off the international pool money. And so he's not going to get a crazy large contract. It's likely going to be for $4 or $5 million a year, similar to how like an arbitration type contract, I would say.
Yeah, well, we messaged about this a little bit over the week, and I haven't really changed my mind. I think whether it's a 6-year minimum or a 10-year max, the Dodgers are going to get him. The Ohtani deal goes way further than one World Series win for them. They got him because all the top Japanese guys are going to put the Dodgers at the top of their list, too. So I think no matter the money, he's going to find his way over here, unfortunately, for everyone else.
Yeah, I also picked just Sasaki to go to the Dodgers. I do find it very weird that he's deciding to come over this season, over next season, because next season would be the time that he would be able to get that big contract. And I was watching a video on this from Lance Brodowski. He's got a very confusing last name, but very knowledgeable guy on YouTube that posts a lot of advanced like pitching metrics and stuff like that. And I was watching a video of his earlier today because I was curious on the situation. And he was talking about how Sasaki's numbers have not looked as good over the past year, going back from the 2023 Nippon season to the 2023 World Baseball Classic to the 2024 season. And he was talking about how the numbers are kind of different because of the balls that they're using. I guess Japan, the balls are way different than here in the States, but all Sasaki's numbers went down last year, and it was his fastball velocity, his slider velocity, his arm side run with his fastball. All the stuff was decreasing numbers, and it makes me curious. Like, if obviously all these guys that throw really hard are probably going to get
Tommy John candidate.
You know, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that he's hurt. I know eventually that's going to happen, and even Lance in the video was talking about how when you sign a pitcher to a 6-7 year contract, especially a guy that throws that hard, you're expecting him to have one of those years probably where he doesn't play. But for Sasaki, I think it might come sooner rather than later, just because those numbers are down. And it makes no financial sense for him to come over this season rather than next season, because he would get paid $300 million and be set forever.
You want those California doctors. I see.
Like, it's interesting. I'm curious if it's like him not betting on himself and just wanting to get to the MLB first, and maybe he gets, say, Tommy John next year, he stays in Japan, and then his value goes way down, and then he has to play another season after that. So I'm not exactly sure. I just a little bit of speculation there that he might get hurt, and I wouldn't be shocked if he needs Tommy John within the next year or two. But I do think he goes to the Dodgers and just builds a dream-like rotation for them. Next up, biggest shortstop on the market, Willy Adames.
Yeah, this is another very popular rumor, but I have no reason not to believe that the Giants are going to keep throwing massive money at a shortstop. We heard it even again after I took these notes from Buster Posey himself. We are throwing big money at shortstops. So here's the biggest name. Even if he ends up playing third, that's kind of exactly what you need in San Francisco.
Yeah, I said this earlier this year. I think Willy Adames fits in perfectly as the Giants. That's where I have him going. He's not the biggest name. He's not, a $300 million shortstop. But I do think he gets eight for 200 from them. So a long-term contract with obviously a ton of money. I wouldn't be shocked if some divisional opponents are also in play here. The Dodgers, their shortstop situation isn't 100% clear. Do they want Edmund? So they move Edmund to a different position and play, Adames at shortstop. I think the Padres are going to be interested into him as well, too. But the Giants, I think, are probably going to throw the most money at him, and I think would have the biggest role on that team there in San Francisco if that's what he wants. Next one, big lefty, Max Fried.
This is another one that 100% will come down to the domino effect of this. So I have them going to the Padres. Obviously, I think the Dodgers would be a perfect fit too, but they're probably tapped out with the Yamamoto and Sasaki duo, depending on, you know, we still don't know about Sasaki's contract, obviously, but San Diego is another team that likes to spend. They need some reinforcements for the Darvish and Musgrove injuries, and they love Wheeling and Dealing.
Yeah. Max Fried, I have going to the Dodgers. He's from LA. Jack Flaherty is a guy that we'll talk about sooner, or not sooner, in a little bit on this list. But I believe, Max Fried's got to go to LA, right? I don't think it's going to be a crazy long-term deal. I think he's got some injury potential there, and some of his velo stuff hasn't been encouraging over the past year or two. So I say 5 for $135. He's not going to get, you know, a 7-year deal or anything like that. But definitely a guy that has a lot of upside. And the Dodgers, whether they go 5-man rotation or 6-man rotation.
I was going to say, how many guys do they need to trade if they get all these guys?
Thing is, it doesn't matter for them. They had so many guys hurt this past year that, like, if you look at their healthy rotation last year, like, Gonsolin, Kershaw didn't pitch. Bueller was out for the majority of the season. River Ryan, who I really like, was out for the year. It's getting Tommy John now. Gavin Stone, really good for most of the year. They didn't have those guys. Not even to mention that Julio Urias, who was on their team a year ago, is obviously now off, but he was one of the best pitchers in the league as well, too. Got the last out of the 2020 World Series. But just crazy to think that they have the ability to do this. And the money is just – it's continuously printing in LA for that Dodgers team. Next up, another shortstop, probably pretty coveted as well, too. It's going to be Ha-Seong Kim, not confused with Hi-Seong Kim, who we'll talk about later.
That's a good point. I actually typed in the wrong one doing some research on the numbers earlier, so I can definitely relate. I'm going to throw a wild card at you here. I didn't see this anywhere. I have Ha-Seong Kim to the Pirates. Some teams may be trying to lock him up long-term despite the injuries because it's not a great market for middle infielders, and I think Pittsburgh should be trying to compete now. I heard O'Neill Cruz will be moving outside of shortstop. And they got a massive hole there for opening day at shortstop. I think it could be a pretty good fit.
Yeah, I like that. I decided to go in a different spot. I don't think this is a huge, huge deal. I don't think we're looking at, you know, $100+ million or anything like that. But I think 4 for $60 is reasonable to Atlanta. Atlanta is a team that I've talked about needing to figure out their shortstop situation. And they're in one of the spots where they don't need a ton of offensive production from their shortstop. And that's kind of exactly what Ha-Seong Kim brings to you. He's going to be about an average bat, maybe a bit better. He's got speed, but his defense is so killer at the shortstop position that it just makes your team so much better. And I think that fits it perfectly for them. I'm interested to see how that goes, because usually the Korean guys like to stay on the West Coast. We don't really see a lot of them venture off to the East Coast. At least not like via trade or something like that. But I do think Atlanta fits really well here. And 4 for $60, I think, is reasonable for what he'll get. Next up, Gleyber Torres, another guy that's a pretty interesting name this, you know, hot stove season.
Yeah, a really interesting one for sure. There's a lot of teams always need right-handed hitting. And I'm not sure if this is even a team that has talked to him or has thought about it yet, but I got the Detroit Tigers. What a great playoff run. Falls short because they had like two hitters they actually trusted, and their big prospect right-handed hitter Torkelson hasn't been as trustworthy. So I think whether it's second base, third base, DH, shortstop, Detroit would love to have a bat like this in the middle of the order.
Gleyber Torres is in a weird spot, in my opinion. He had a pretty bad regular season. Last couple of months are pretty good. And then a good playoff as well, too. And I'm interested to see how that affects his market, because I think if you take out this year and he was going into free agency after 2023, he'd be a guy that's getting 100+ pretty easily.
From the Cubs.
So I think he plays on a one-year deal. I don't know who he's represented by, but I think we could see like a player option that we usually see like with Boris's contracts in 26 for – you know, 15 or 20 mil to kind of say, oh, if he sucks, he's going to get paid another, you know, 20 mil, you're going to have to play him. Or if he does really well, he's just going to leave you the year after. And I think the team that he ends up going to is the Padres. I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be interested in Torres because of that low AAV that we're going to see with him this year. So I had the Giants listed. I had the Rays listed. I had the Twins listed. I had the Texas Rangers listed, not the Texans. But I do think Gleyber Torres is going to be a free agent again in the coming years. And I do think he'll end up getting that $100 million contract that he's seeking, but not this year. 1 year deal with the Padres. Next up, Yusei Kikuchi.
I have Kikuchi going to the Texas Rangers. It was a rough season for him, but the starter market usually gets really hot for the rentals around December winter meetings time. So I'm sure he won't be one of those guys waiting until spring training. The Rangers are losing Evaldi. They took a couple of shots here, maybe, at pitcher. Obviously, Scherzer and Verlander and all that stuff didn't work. So let's try it again. Take a couple shots in the dark.
I'm going Kikuchi to the Mets. Another team that had, you know, Scherzer and Verlander and all those guys as well too, ironically. But I don't think they're going to get all the guys back from this previous team, Minaya and Severino, two guys that we'll talk about in a bit. And I don't want to say what I have with them so far. But I do think he goes to the Mets. I think he's going to be cheaper than Minaya or Severino. He's 34 years old, so you're not going to have to pay a crazy deal either. I think 3 for $45 is kind of reasonable. And they already got another Japanese pitcher in Kodai Senga. And I know it kind of sounds racist to say that, you know, that, oh, they're going to go play with Japanese player, other Japanese
players. It's another guy who speaks the same language. That's big.
In the past. Yeah. You know, that's something that we've seen a huge track record of in the MLB. And so I think Kodai and Kikuchi in the same rotation will be beneficial for both of them, especially playing the same position. Next up, Jack Flaherty. I mean, how much has he boosted his market value over this past year?
Yeah, massively. And for that reason, I got Jay Flair going to the Yankees. You know they're going to want a starter with World Series experience, and they miss out on a couple of those top dogs in our scenario. So why not take a shot on Jay Flair? He's been great in the postseason.
Yeah. I have Jay Flair getting a ton of money. I have it 7 for $200, just under that Corbin Burns deal. And that's because of how young he is. I believe he's still 29 years old, not even 30 yet. So you're going to get him for a 7-year deal through probably his age 36 season. He's one of the best starting pitchers on the market. I already had Fried and Sasaki go to the Dodgers, and I'm having Flaherty stay with them as well too. Why leave? He played high school ball, Max Fried. I think it's going to be perfectly to blend with that. And I saw a tweet that was talking, it's Shohei Yamamoto, probably Fried, Glasnow, Sasaki, and Flaherty is your rotation. That's six guys. That's something that we've often seen with Shohei before as well, too. I think if you have a six-man rotation, you're obviously pitching less. You're going to have a greater chance to stay healthy throughout the season. And I think that's what these guys care about right now. All they want to do is win. And Flaherty, what a great situation to just stay home and get a ton of money and pitch for the best team in all of baseball. Next up, Nathan Eovaldi.
I like Eovaldi still. It feels like every time I watch him on TV, he's still throwing gas, even though he's in his late 30s. I have him going to Baltimore. I could easily see him returning to Texas or Boston. But hey, this is the late 30s now. They're not going to take a massive risk. Baltimore, we know, doesn't have really any experience of paying guys a lot of money yet. This would be his fourth AL East teams. Sometimes guys just like staying in the division because you know a lot of the guys, what they're looking for. One of those guys that are losing a starter or two. They're going to get at least one of these guys, right?
Yeah. I like Eovaldi a ton. Been one of my favorite pitchers to watch over the last few years. I think definitely the 18 World Series with the Red Sox influenced that quite a bit, but he's been fun to watch. We've seen his whole career arc from being a top prospect with the Dodgers to going to the Marlins to playing for the other team in Florida, to playing with the Red Sox, playing with the Yankees, playing with a whole bunch of different teams, yeah. And really having a really good stretch of baseball over the past couple of years with the Rangers. I'm curious to see how he's valued and if it's maybe just a me thing with how much I value him. So I have him 3 for $60 going to the Tigers. I think the Tigers are definitely a team that should be looking for other starters besides Tarik Skubal, and hopefully Jackson Jobe as well too. And I think Eovaldi is going to be one of those guys that isn't a top-of-the-line money guy, but definitely going to be a good production guy at the three spot or four spot.
He would dominate the Central. So, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he suits pretty well there. Next up, a fun bat, 40 homer switch. I mean, who doesn't like a 40 homer switch hitting outfielder? Anthony Santander.
Yeah, it starts off as a really fun conversation, and then it gets sad because I picked the Yankees. If Soto's gone, this seems like a very quick fix for them.
That'd make a lot of sense. I think he's going to be one of the most popular guys on the market because he's a bat. He's an outfielder. You usually need a ton of outfielders. He's got the ability to play first base if you really want that. He's a switch hitter, so it's not like he's really bad versus lefties or righties. He's got power to both sides. He fits every single team in the MLB right now. Obviously, not every single team is going to try to sign him due to what they're going on. But I have the Reds as a team that's going to pick him up. I think that bat in Great American Ballpark would be very scary, especially with that right field wall being so short and so shallow. I think they did something like this similar last year with Yammer Candelario, bringing him in on a deal that we kind of didn't expect to see them do. And I think it's perfect again this year. 5 for 100. Obviously, the Yankees probably going to be quite in on him as well too. But maybe he just hates the Yankees so much from being in Baltimore for so long that he doesn't want to go there. That's something that we've seen with Vladdy talk about, that he never wants to be a Yankee, even with all these Yankee fans predicting that they're going to trade for him this year. Regardless, I don't think he goes there. I'm saying Cincinnati is maybe a bold pick here. And next up, Nick Pivetta, not the craziest name, but a productive name.
Yeah, I say he just takes the QO, qualifying offer, stays in Boston. Give it one more try. Obviously, things should be a little better, but you never know. A lot of young guys coming into the building next year. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think he'll get more than 21.1 in the open market, and that's what the qualifying offer is. I think he'll accept that. So I'm happy we're on the same page there. He goes back to the Red Sox. Next up is Christian Walker.
This is a fun one. You know what? I'll do it. I'll say he goes to the Mets too. It's really hard to ignore the rumors that if Walker does leave the desert, they're going to desperately need someone at first base, depending on what happens with the next guy. He also plays amazing defense. He might win the Platinum too. We were just talking about this before voting on Platinum Glove guys. He's on the list.
Yeah. Christian Walker is an interesting one. He's a fun bat. He's got 40 homer power from the right side, plays good defense at first base, like you talked about. But there's one fit that feels just too good to not happen because he's already clean shaven, and it's the Yankees. I don't think it's going to be a ton of money either, which plays in pretty perfectly to how this time runners want to reduce payroll. I don't know why, but 4 for 60. He's already 34 years old, so you're not going to have to give him $150 million or anything like that. And I think Christian Walker, the Yankees, just fits too good for it not to happen. So I'd say 4 for 60 there. Obviously, two domino guys back-to-back here. It's kind of tough to choose which order to do them. So we have Pete Alonso coming up next. The two big first basemen on the market this year.
So, yeah, I just switched this as we're doing this. I had Christian Walker to the Yankees, of course, for all those reasons. Those are great reasons. If it happens, I'm not going to fight you on it. It just makes so much sense too. But Pete Alonso's a great hitter. He deserves a big contract. I just have the feeling that the Mets aren't going to give him the money he thinks he's worth. There's been some Washington rumors. I don't buy it. They're similar with Cincinnati. They're going to do the weird stuff. They're not going to go over the big names. So I got Houston over all the West teams in the mix. I don't think Pete minds being a villain, and you kind of have to be okay with that to go to Houston.
I'd hate that bat with that short porch, but I'm Pete Alonso, the polar bear, staying in New York with the Mets. I think it would be stupid to sign Soto for $645 million like I have, and then cheap out into other aspects because Cohen's got the money. He's not afraid. And so I think given Pete Alonso the contract that he deserves from the fan base that absolutely loves him, It would be exactly what needs to happen this offseason for them. 6 for 120 is what I have. But obviously the things can change with that as well. Next up, Jurickson Profar, another guy who drastically changes value. We'll talk about a couple of those guys here in the future as well too. But drastically changes value over the last 365 days. Will he go for the big contract? Or will he go somewhere else?
I think they're going to find a happy medium here. If you're San Diego, you've got to bring him back. He's so versatile. He can play any position. Kim is probably already gone since they already declined their thing a couple weeks ago. I think this is one of those guys you just got to bring back.
Yeah. I think he stays at the Padres as well, too. I wouldn't be shocked to see him go to the Yankees or something like that because he's got the versatility to be able to do that. But I do think he'll be able to be willing to go a bit cheaper to Sandy or stay in San Diego for less money because they were the kind of the team that, you know, fixed them, I guess, so to speak. Obviously he doesn't believe that it's all stuff that he did, but I think there's gotta be a bit of loyalty within there. 4 for 60 is what I have. He's been young forever. Now he's starting to get old, in his 30s already. So I don't think we're seeing any crazy contract, but about 15 mil, maybe even less for than 4 years, maybe two. But I think he stays in San Diego. Next up, Max Scherzer, likely going to be a 1 year deal. Obviously, a lot of contenders are going to be in on Scherzer. Where do you think he ends up next season?
Another rumor that I liked a lot was Scherzer to the Royals. I feel like they can only benefit from bringing him in the clubhouse, be their Granky of the year, if you will. Because even if he does get hurt again, like you said, you're not giving him a multi-year deal. Also, he's from Mizzou, so it makes sense.
Yeah. I like Atlanta. I think especially if they lose Max Fried, this will be a guy that they can target. And kind of just like Charlie Morton, they're not afraid to go after old guys. And Max Scherzer's got the track record to show that he's still going to be productive as a 42, 41-year-old, whatever it is. A lot of championship contenders in it, of course. I have him going to the Orioles. I think this is a perfect spot where it's a 1 year, $15 million deal. And just bolster up that rotation that seemed to consistently fall apart last year. And if it does fall apart with Scherzer again this year, it's not the end of the world because it's a one-year deal. But I think they definitely need to add at that starting pitcher position. And I think Scherzer is a perfect guy to help round out that rotation with a guy that has the track record to help those young guys get through their season as well, too, as a, you know, top-tier contender.
All right, we're back. We had a little power outage delay, but where we left off, Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, so I'll let you get started on that. I forget exactly what you said, Skyler. So where's Teoscar going?
Yeah, so I think the Giants are going to be big spenders on any kind of power hitter. Obviously, the Dodgers will have their first pick here if they want to bring him back. But I'm going to change my pick again. So I'm going to have back-to-back Kansas City guys, Max Scherzer and Teo, both go in there. I feel like you got to try to surround Bobby Witt Jr. with as much protection as you can in that lineup. I think he'd be okay leaving LA for more money if a team had great potential like Kansas City does for the future.
Yeah. And we talked about guys like Jack Flaherty and Jurickson Profar with the last 365 days having the biggest uptick in their value. And I think Teoscar Hernandez falls right inside of that. So the contract that he would have signed long-term a year ago, it's definitely different than what it would be this year. And I think he's going to get 5 years, $120 million from the Red Sox. It's a fit that I really like. I think Duran's got center lockdown. William Abreu's got right field lockdown. But you look at left field, they've kind of had a few different guys go in there. Tyler O'Neill being one of them, who we'll talk about a bit later. Ref Snyder as well, too. But you throw him in left field, and I think he's going to be fitting in perfect there. I know they got a ton of guys in the minor league system. Maybe you say Christian Campbell's going to take that spot. But Teoscar Hernandez is a great bat to have. And I don't think they're going to pass up that opportunity with a fit like that. So I like that there. We'll move on next to the left-hander, Sean Manaea, who's also had a pretty good 365 days.
Yeah, this guy has earned himself a big pay raise, pitching very well in the postseason this year. I think you may have mentioned this earlier today. The Angels would give him the money that he wants, but I really think he should stay with the Mets. Maybe it's another domino effect that they don't land a Corbin Burns. They would have to bring back a couple more guys than they didn't think they would. But I really think being a number three or four with the Mets is the best spot for him.
Yeah, things clicked for Sean Manaea with the Mets this past year. I do have him going somewhere else, though, and I think there's going to be a lot of teams in on Manaea. So I think there's definitely going to be like a 15-team option type thing for him for good left-handed starter. I think the Cubs kind of stick out to me here. I think they're a team that's shown not to spin, not afraid to spin on those like mid-tier guys, and I think they could add one more arm in their rotation to really be sure about it going into 2025. And what seems like a weaker division in the MLB and the NL Central. So I have 3 years, $65 million for the 33-year-old Sean Manaea in Chicago. Next up is his fellow pitcher in New York is Luis Severino.
So this one feels like an Angels move to me. They're one of those teams that is always going to overspend on certain positions. Why would you not take this one instead of another prove it deal if you're Luis Severino, right? Not the as good of a year as Manaea.
Yeah, I like Luis Severino. Obviously, his narrative has changed quite a bit over the last 6 years. For when he first came up with the Yankees and was really dominant in 2018, I want to say. It's battling injuries the last few and then really having a good, healthy year with the Mets this past year. Definitely showed that he's going to get a good contract, and I'd expect him to get a good amount of money because of that ceiling that he has. So I expect 4 years, maybe 80 or 90 million. I do think he ends up going back to the Mets, so I think New York is the place that he wants to stay, especially since he found it again this past year with the Queens, or not the Queens, but the Mets in Queens. Next up, Nick Martinez.
I think this is another QO guy qualifying offer. He pitched really well in Cincinnati this year. I believe it was a sub-2 ERA out of the bullpen, so keep it rolling, I guess.
And Nick Martinez is a pretty unique guy when it comes to pitchers where he can pitch in the rotation, he can pitch out of the background of the bullpen or be a middle of the bullpen guy and kind of succeed in all the roles. And I think having that durability and flexibility is pretty valuable. I do think he goes somewhere else. And I think it's in terms of length of contract, not because of the money. So I have him signing a 3-year deal, probably around $45 million with the Guardians. I think he's a guy that can kind of go to one of those central teams and be okay. I think the Guardians make a lot of sense because they might lose a couple of guys this offseason, and having a flexible guy like Martinez would help him a ton. Next up is Tyler O'Neill.
This is the kind of guy I could see the Washington Nationals going after. They've been in on some of the top guys. I really don't think they're going to be able to land a Pete Alonso or a Santander. So Tyler O'Neill is kind of the next best option. The injury history should keep the price down, but it's obviously an upgrade. It's a squad whose lineup completely collapsed, and I think he could get a 3-year from a Washington compared to a 1-year from an Atlanta.
Yeah, Tyler O'Neill's an interesting spot. Like you said, the health is one thing. And I think an intriguing team for him to go to, since I haven't mentioned him yet, is the Seattle Mariners. You gave him Bregman. I think that's probably the leader in who are the M's going to add this year. Bregman's probably the most answered Family Feud type answer guy. Tyler O'Neill, not as much, but I think his power, especially to a team like the Mariners, can definitely be something that fits really well. I have 3 years, $40 million, so not the highest AAV, but definitely good money for a guy who's a pretty good player in the MLB. Next up, Paul Goldschmidt out of St. Louis. Where does he land?
I think he should go back to Arizona. I know in the past, this may have even been a couple months ago, but I remember specifically you connecting him to Houston. And I don't mind that. But if Christian Walker leaves, the Snakes should put this guy at the top of their board.
Yeah, I had Christian Walker going to the Yankees, and so I was going through the teams and looking at where Paul Goldschmidt could land in, a likely contender. You're not going to see him go to a really bad team or something like that for a 1-year deal, whatever it may be. And I think going back to Arizona is the perfect situation. I have just a 1-year deal for $8 to $10 million. I don't think he's much higher than a replacement level now at this point in his career. But this is a guy they love. This is a guy that they'll trust. He can play both sides of the ball pretty well. And it would be a cool thing for the fans as well, too, because he was a fan favorite when he was there, of course. Next up, Jock Peterson, now former Diamondback.
Yeah, another massive season here for Jock Peterson in Arizona. I think he could get some real money from Toronto. I don't see him going back to the Cubs, another team I've seen him connected to, just because it wasn't a great rental over there. And that's how it goes in baseball. Toronto's not going to roll over. I think the only guy they would think about moving is maybe Bo Bichette via trade, but they're not sellers. They have the money. Go get another outfielder.
Yeah, Jock Peterson's a weird guy because he's practically a platoon at this point in his career. I don't think you're going to see him start consistently against left-handers at any point now in the future, but versus right-handed pitchers, he's like one of the best hitters in the league in that aspect. So he's going to be an expensive platoon, but I think the Royals, who you had Teoscar going to, yeah, be the perfect team for him to go to, just because it adds more length to that lineup. We see Pasquantino, Salvi, who's starting to get old, and Bobby Witt. And those really feel like the three marquee guys in that lineup. And then after that, it feels to get really shallow really quickly. Jock Peterson, I think, adds, you know, definitely another guy to that lineup that you're like, holy shit, we got to be scared of this guy. And he's not going to cost a ton of money in the grand scheme of things. So 3 years, $45 million to the Royals. Next up, Shane Bieber.
I say he gets another prove-it deal. Or I guess his first, I'm sorry, but we've been talking about prove it deals with these pitchers. I think it's another situation. They've done this multiple times in Baltimore. He's still going to need some time coming back from TJ. And they are possibly losing their ace, Corbin Burns.
Yeah. My biggest question with Shane Bieber is how much is he going to pitch for you this year? Kind of feels Lucas Giolito like a little bit. I know Giolito went into the offseason last year knowing he was going to be out the entire season before he signed that contract with the Red Sox. Bieber got his Tommy John very early in April, so I'd expect him back in probably, you know, May or June, or maybe even be ready by, you know, opening day. But I still don't think we're going to see a full workload from him regardless, so I definitely think it's going to be one of those one-year deals. I think the Padres make a lot of sense here as well, too, because he is a buy low, potentially really work out well for you type guy. So I have 1 year, $15 million for them with a player option for the same in 2026. If, you know, things work out horribly, he could just say, yep, I'm coming back. Or if it doesn't, or if things do really work out and he, you know, pitches to the ability that we know he has and did in his, you know, only two starts in 2023, one of them that we saw in person. Yeah, Shane Bieber's going to get paid a lot of money next offseason. But for now, he's got to stick with the group. Jose Iglesias.
I have him going back to the Mets. He should be pretty cheap. Citi Field is one of those few places he's had a lot of success in his post-prime career. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to stick around there, though. I think this is a candidate to be traded at the deadline.
Yeah, Iglesias is in a weird spot because he's not young. He doesn't provide a ton of power, and how much stock they really put into him hitting 340 again next year. Cause that always, he was a guy throughout the entire season. I kept on checking his numbers. I'm like, damn, like they're still 340. Like he's still hitting 340 in September. Like that's not something I expected to see. I do think the Mets are going to be a bit cautious to sign him back because I do think they want to start playing Acuna at second base. And I think at that point, I don't think it's worth it for them to sign him back, but I do think another team that needs him, especially if Gleyber Torres is gone, would be the Yankees. He provides the ability to play second, short, and third if they really need that. He's not going to be expensive and fits into a lineup well that already has a ton of power, so that's not exactly what they need. I have 2 years, $15 million, so you know, 7.5 AAV or however you want to average that out in the first year, second year. But I think the Yankees would be a big fit for Iglesias if Gleyber goes somewhere else. Next guy, World Series champ for the second time, Walker Buehler.
I have Walker Buehler going to the Tigers. The Tigers are one of those teams that have been missing out on a lot of middle tier starters for me. So they're going to take the risk on the World Series hero and probably don't have to spend too much since he had a pretty bad regular season and injuries, of course.
Yeah, another guy that I also have going to the Tigers, him and Nathan Eovaldi being the two guys that I mocked there. It gives a shot to him to be a top-of-the-line arm, obviously not the ace because Tariq's got that set, but to be a, you know, two- or three-starter on a pretty good team is important, I think, to Walker Buehler, and he's not just going to go pitch for a team that's shit, even if they do give him the money. With that being said, I don't think we're going to see a crazy long-term contract, maybe, you know, 1 or 2 years of the player option after that or something like that, because I do think Walker Buehler definitely believes in himself to have a good season and then go out and get the contract that we expected him to get, you know, post-2022 before Tommy John. We were all saying this guy's going to, you know, make $200 million, be a Dodger for life. And now things are kind of not seeming that way. And I think if you were to go back to the Dodgers, he'd probably have to be in the bullpen. And that's not something that he'd like. So I'd say Walker Buehler goes to Detroit. And now on to the last two guys. First guy is from the MPB named Kazuma Okamoto. For the people that don't know him, because I assume not a lot of people do, 28-year-old third baseman, first baseman, outfielder playing in the MPB over the last 6 or 7 years, it looks like. He had 27 homers this year, 41 the year before that, 30 the year before that, 39 the year before that, 30 the one year before that. So he's a known power threat from the right-handed side of the batter's box. Where do you think Okamoto lands?
I've picked the Cubs for Okamoto. I don't know much about him, but just like you said, it looks like he's been a consistent 30-homer guy in a pretty good league. Maybe Imanaga helps with the recruiting here. It's just one of those situations where the Cubs are always in the market for a power bat. They seem to keep missing out. So maybe they take the risk on an older prospect.
I definitely think there's a slight risk, of course, on a guy coming over from overseas. But what we've seen over the past 20 years is that these guys really make the journey over really well. And I think Okamoto will benefit from that and get in, you know, out of just a, you know, $5 million contract or something like that. I think teams are going to be more willing to go long-term. So I have a 4-for-$40 million deal with the Seattle Mariners. It's a team that we obviously know has signed Japanese players before. Yes. Okamoto fits right into that. And the versatility to play third, first, or outfield is definitely going to be something that they can value because they kind of need all those different positions. And he fits in perfectly there. Next up, last guy that we have is Ha-Seong Kim, not Ha-Seong Kim. This guy is from Korea, left-handed hitting second baseman with the ability to play shortstop, high contact and good defense. And I don't think this is racist, but I think his play is very similar to Jung-Hoo Lee, where it's contact base, a lot of speed base, not going to hit the ball the ballpark a ton, good eye as well too. And has the ability to steal bases. So kind of the exact player profile that we see from Lee, just in the infield spot here. So how do you think Ha-Seong Kim's trade as he plays out?
There's not a lot of rumors about this guy yet, but what we do know is that this guy has been winning what is basically the platinum glove in the KBO over the past couple of years. And the Dodgers got to watch him firsthand during the Seoul series, when they were all out there scouting guys and having their own games, of course, against San Diego. They've had some middle infield trouble despite still winning the World Series. I think this is a direction the Dodgers could go if they start running out of time and they still don't have a second baseman.
Yeah. I have the Giants getting up. So the same team that Jung-Hoo Lee is on, and I think that partially plays into it because I think the Giants really saw how the fan base reacted to getting Jung-Hoo Lee last year. And how immediately he became a fan base favorite. And I think Kim has the exact ability to do that as well, too. The only question here is how does everything fit with the guys, being that I had him getting Willy Adames as well, too. Adames obviously takes short. I think Kim takes second. And that kind of leaves Fitzgerald in a weird spot. I think he has the ability to move to the outfield, which we've seen him play in the past as well, too. And I think with the possibility that they trade Yaz or go in a different direction with some of the corner outfield spots, I think Fitzgerald could fit in there. So if you have any questions about fit, I think that's how things go with that. But that does it for MLB free agency predictions. Took us about 3 hours because of the lack of power, but now we're back, of course. And now we're into the second half with Skyler's mock draft, which I was interested.
Yeah. I know I'm excited for this one. I've been delaying it a little bit just because I was waiting for more to happen in the NFL. I know about these prospects already. It's just trying to find that right fit. You know, we know the play style. So we'll get right into it. I'll talk top 10 and then any notables that I see here. So we'll start it off. It's the current draft order, except I did this right before the Tampa-Kansas City game. So I think Tampa's 14 in real life. They're 16 on here. Don't worry about it. We'll start off with the Patriots at the top spot. It may be a little boring here, but I'm going to take Will Campbell, left tackle from LSU. It's possible he plays guard in the NFL, but I think I counted like 12 different offensive linemen that could go in the first round. He's a good one. Drake May's running for his life out there, man. Number two, though, probably the most intriguing prospect in the entire class, Jacksonville Jaguars. I have Travis Hunter. I think it definitely depends on the squad. I want to see him play corner in the NFL just because there's so few lockdown corners, right? Like you think of Revis and Woodson and Deion, but there's not a lot of wiggle room when it comes to a lockdown corner. Maybe they find a receiver package too, because I know they've had their own issues with injuries over there. Number three, it's the Saints. What a crazy change of events. They went from the hottest team in football to full tank mode. They traded their corner. Definitely could be a Will Johnson spot, but he's hurt. So I'm going to go with James Pierce Jr., edge rusher from Tennessee. So far, he has put out the best tape. There's a lot of speed rushers in this class, but he weighs a little more than the others, like a 235-pound Abdul Carter. This guy is big. He reminds me of some of the Georgia guys that have gone early, and that's why. Number four, Carolina. I ended up not going quarterback. Hey, Bryce Young got the win, right? It was New Orleans, but he got a win. Well, maybe we'll try one more year. Get him Tet McMillan from Arizona. Big body, 6'5 receiver. Reminds me of Mike Evans. Now we get into the fun stuff here. At number five, the Cleveland Browns will take who they think is the top quarterback in the class, Cam Ward, Miami. I still think Cam Ward's going to be the first one taken. Kyle is looking pretty happy right now because he knows the next pick is the Raiders at six, should Shedeur Sanders falls into the lap. I'm not sure if he's going to be a guy who's ready to go day one. I'm not sure if any of these guys are, but he's definitely got the most potential out of all of them. He's definitely the most pro style, ready to go out of the group. And that'd be pretty exciting to see him in Vegas. That's for sure. Go through the rest of the top 10 here. At seven, the Giants. Doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. They passed for 0 yards in the first half the other day because they can't protect the quarterback. So how about Kelvin Banks? He's a right tackle at Texas. Pretty good pass pro. We'll see where he ends up, but I'm sure they'd love sticking him at right tackle. I feel similar about this next pick too. It's the Miami Dolphins. They're going to take a big projection guard, Ariente Ursary. Minnesota, he kind of looks like Mekhi Becton, except he doesn't get hurt every play. So we'll see if it's a right guard, right tackle, left tackle situation. It's one of those classes, man. If you remember Andrew Thomas, Becton, Wirfs, Jedrick Wills, all of them kind of had very similar talk about positions. And hey, most of them stayed at tackle. At number nine, it's the Titans. I don't think they're going to reach on a quarterback. I gave him Abdul Carter from Penn State. Used to play inside linebacker and safety. Now he plays off the edge, and he is one of the scariest pass rushers in the nation. Number 10, it's my Jets. So many things have gone wrong this year. And at the end of the day, I think they're just going to try to take the best player available. I think that's Mason Graham, D tackle for Michigan. The worst part of our team is we can't stop the run. Actually, these next couple picks are pretty interesting. I'll keep going down the list. 11 is the Cowboys, Ashton Jeanty. they need a running back so badly right now. I could see Jeanty or Omarion Hampton, North Carolina, going in the first. And I love it because don't kill the running backs, man. They're so important to the game.
Of course. And
number 12 is the Colts, another team with a lot of issues, injuries. Let's go corner. They've been playing seventh round rookies at corner this year. So Will Johnson falls in their lap. He's been battling with some knee injuries. We'll see if he can get out to the combine and run really well. Then that'll have him going in the top five. But as of right now, we'll hold off on that talk. Similar with the Niners pick, a couple picks down, I'm taking Benjamin Morrison, a corner from Notre Dame. Unfortunately, again, out for the year with an ACL, but was once thought of as a top five player in the class. Very good man coverage corner from Notre Dame. Luther Burden to your rivals, the Broncos. Who knows if Cortland Sutton's staying? It could be tight end. Sean Payton's just going to look for someone to catch the football. And the Chiefs, Colston Loveland, tight end. Just something real quick. You know, we've been hearing these rumors about, oh, Mr. Kelsey wants to start a family. Would he retire? Huh. I think it's definitely possible. And this would be the most ridiculous fit ever for them, too. They just seem to always have him fall in their lap, right?
Yeah, especially if they win again. I definitely think there's a good chance he retires.
Yeah. Well, the mock draft is always one of the most fun exercises that we can do here. The order is definitely not going to be the same. I'm sure there'll be about 20 different players we didn't talk about that will be going high in the draft too. But it's definitely weird. We don't have a lot of blue chip offensive players. They may go really early, and after that, we flip a coin to decide what happens. So Now on to the second half of this, more college football. We did have our first CFP rankings today, which is pretty cool. So we'll talk about it. Oregon is still 9-0. They get the top spot, of course. And really the only switch here is Ohio State is going to get bumped 2 over Georgia at 3. I guess losing pretty close to the number one team the committee likes. Good for them. After that, we have Miami still undefeated. Fuck, man. Clemson got destroyed here. Good for Miami. Bad for our predictions. Obviously, if they win the ACC, that's a different story. But SMU is 13-8-1 now in the ACC. Some people may have forgotten the ponies are back, man. Screw the death penalty. We're back. Some other teams in the wild card race here. It's not really the wild card race, but it's the equivalency. The other teams at large, Penn State, Tennessee, both 7-1. Indiana's at 8. They're still undefeated. Same with BYU, Notre Dame, Alabama, and my Boise State Broncos. I'm glad they actually did give them the 12 spot. I was a little concerned. Some of the coaching polls had them a little lower, like 19. But hey, dude, they lost by 3 at Oregon. You know, good for them. Colorado's now ranked at 20. Boise's biggest win, Washington State, is 21, which is really good for the resume. And your guys, Army, they're still ranked, but they are 25th. So a little uphill battle here. They got to beat Notre Dame, looks like.
Yeah, I think that's intentional that they put them down low, because there is that, like, why take these guys seriously until they do beat Notre Dame? And Bryson Daly didn't play this past week as well, too. They beat Air Force by, I don't know, like 14 points or whatever, but they're going to need them. This week against North Texas, because that's when shit starts getting real. It's North Texas next week, and then Notre Dame the week after that. So hopefully Bryson Daly's back, because they obviously have no chance if they don't have, you know, their Heisman candidate quarterback.
Shout out to the American for keeping things interesting for us, though. It's always nice when the group of five is good, because you know, I'm a fan of the group of five. Yeah. It's always good. I don't have an official Heisman watch, but I can tell you right now what it looks like. Ashton Jeanty, not a great game to his standards, but it was still 180 and 2 touchdowns. So he's going to be, I think, still tied with Travis Hunter, who had the bye week. But he had about 80 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns, and a great game on defense. You also have Cam Ward has looked like the best quarterback in the nation. Bryson Daly at Army is a running and basically a touchdown machine so far. And any of the freshman receivers could get an invite to New York. But at this point, I don't think you're going to win as a receiver this year, especially as a freshman. We'll watch out next year. So we'll get right into the schedule for this week. Some pretty good games. 9 a.m. We'll kick it off on Saturday. It's number 4 Miami at Georgia Tech. Basically the only decent game for an NFL prospect or a top-ranked team. Georgia Tech did get the upset in Dublin. Now we know Florida State's not very good, so we'll see. At 12:30, though, it's number 3 Georgia at 16 Ole Miss. If Georgia blows them out, it's all good. We have a Big 12 showdown, 21 Colorado at 6-3 Texas Tech. They just took down Iowa State, so a good 12:30 window, one defensive battle against a shootout. At 4:30,
that's also Army's window as well, too.
Yes, Army North Texas
and Michigan, Indiana during that as well, too.
Sorry, Alex.
Which you guys get? It's not going to matter, but it's a big, could be a big win for Indiana. Is the thing there?
That's a good point, for sure. Maybe the reason I've been avoiding that one is this big game at 4:30. Right, it's 11 Alabama. 14 LSU. They're fighting for that last playoff spot. It really feels like the next loss for these two teams will knock them out, unless a Tennessee collapses completely. And then, hey, at 7:15, us West Coasters got undefeated BYU at their rivals, the Holy War, 4-4 Utah, looking to ruin BYU season. Let's see if Zach Wilson's brother can get the job done, man.
It's crazy how, like, 4 weeks ago, the dialogue was that these two teams are undefeated and, you know, this could decide the Big 12.
Yeah.
And now Utah has lost 4 straight, I'm pretty sure. and BYU's had this Cinderella season. But it should be fun to watch, of course, obviously, in rivalry games, especially with those Mormons. You never know what's going to happen. So we'll be watching that one for sure, obviously, because it's at 7:15 p.m. On Saturday night.
So, like, one last note I have before we move on. BYU won at SMU earlier this year. We didn't even realize how big of a game that was. These are two of the top 15 teams in the nation. And BYU got that edge right now.
It's massive. BYU's been really good.
All right. There's the second half college for you.
Moving on to Lamps and Bowl predictions. 2-for-4 a week this past week. So I guess you could say we broke even. I had Baltimore -9.5 for my layup, and that did hit, of course, in the 31-point victory over Denver. Skyler had number 4, OSU -3.5 at number 3, Penn State. They won by 6 or 7, I want to say. So obviously that hit there. So those are our two greens. This week I have Atlanta Falcons -3.5 versus New Orleans. I was looking at the lines, and I just felt this one is a little bit too close. I think Atlanta could win by a touchdown, especially with all the moving parts in New Orleans. There's obviously the notion of, hey, we just fired our head coach. Usually they always win with their first game in the interim. I think it plays differently here.
Similar thinking with my layup here. I'm going to take the Lions -3.5 because they're on the road at Houston. Houston's looking a little slow right now, a little off on offense at least, and Detroit is basically the most unstoppable offense in the league right now. I think they could win by a touchdown.
Yeah. And also point out with mine, I took this at -3.5 yesterday. I know Marshawn Lattimore got traded today, but I would take this up to a -6.5 or something like that. So if that does change, that's where it's at. Last week for bowl predictions weren't as nice to us. I had Cleveland +105. That did not happen. The Chargers got a very hearty victory there. Skyler had Arkansas +210 versus number 19 Ole Miss. We now know it did not go that way.
They got popped.
This week, I have Pittsburgh moneyline versus Washington. I think that's going to be a very good game versus two teams that have pleasantly surprised us this year. I just think that Pittsburgh defense, this is no shame on Jaden Daniels. It's been well documented. I absolutely love that guy. But I think it might be a little bit tough to play. And I have more confidence in Pittsburgh's defense going up, or Pittsburgh's offense going up against Washington's defense. So I'm taking Pittsburgh +125.
All right, going with some more college football for my bold prediction. It's a +140 for Vanderbilt, who for some reason on the committee is not ranked anymore. I had to take that off my bold prediction because they chose Mizzou. Interesting strategy, guys. We'll see how this one plays out. They're hosting South Carolina. They had a massive win against Texas A&M. But I think Vandy may feel a little disrespected that they took that 24 off of their name. They've both been very good teams. Even if the winner of this is playing for like the Duke's Mayo Bowl, not a playoff spot, it should still be a pretty fiery SEC matchup.
Yeah. That's going to do it, though, for episode 217. We started this at around 4. It's now 8 o'clock, obviously. Big delay in between, but happy we got this done. And we'll see you guys next week. We'll be talking. Hopefully there's maybe some free agent signings. We'll probably get more into the NFL trade deadline kind of stuff that happened then. Maybe the team grades for the teams that were still alive in the playoffs that we last did those a few weeks ago for the MLB. Maybe some NBA check-in, who knows.
Shout out 6-1 Dubs.
Yeah, 6-1 Dubs look good. But the next three games for the Dubs are ridiculous. Combined record of opponents is 22-1 going into Boston and then Cleveland and then OKC. We'll see how that goes. But if they win all three, it's gonna be very annoying for any other type of fan on Twitter because the Warrior fans are back. But
absolutely.
That's gonna do it for 217, unless you get any parting notes.
Happy election day, Kyle.
Yeah, it's almost over.
Yeah, seriously. I didn't really see anything all day because my power went out, and then I went out to dinner, and, well, things are going to start rolling in. We'll see if we know tonight. We'll see.
Yeah. Never know.
We'll see you guys next Tuesday. Always great.
We'll still be here. With you, Kyle. We're getting reelected next week, so we'll be here.
For 218... next Tuesday. We will be there. Adios. Boom.